It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This month, Deere & Company, one of the global leaders of agricultural equipment, agreed to pay a $99 million settlement in a class action suit brought by some of its customers.
The lawsuit advocating for the right to repair movement accused the makers of John Deere products of monopolizing maintenance of its equipment by limiting access to repair software.
People who paid John Deere's authorized dealers for repairs to large agricultural equipment since January of 2018, they're eligible for refunds. In the settlement, the company denied wrongdoing and said it is committed to providing access to maintenance and repair.
Nathan Proctor is the senior Right to Repair campaign director for the Public Interest Research Group. He joins us for a look at the impact on farmers in Wisconsin and elsewhere and wider issues of repair access for consumer goods. Nathan, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Give us an overview, Nathan, of this lawsuit and the settlement that came out of it.
Yeah, so a set of farms sued John Deere because they were unable to fix their equipment. That the equipment is designed in such a way that you need certain software resources, tools, and information to complete those repairs, and they weren't given those. So they said that that was unfair, and that was the basis of their lawsuit. There's more than a dozen farms that, you know, kind of joined into this and created a class trying to force John Deere to provide farmers with the software they need to fix this equipment.
Now, talk a little bit about the equipment in question. People might think farm equipment, and if they haven't been on a farm in a while, picture a circa 1950 tractor or something like that. This is not that. This is some expensive, fancy stuff. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, I think over the last, you know, several decades, the technology that's used on farms has really advanced. And now with what they call precision ag, you know, the equipment is taking precise measurements of the moisture and the nitrogen and the other elements in the soil. It is creating really detailed 3D, precise GPS guided maps to maximize the yield that people get, the more plant per seed, just to gain all those efficiencies. They're doing a lot of that with the equipment, which has a lot of benefits to farmers. They're getting more yield. They're getting more output per acre. Unfortunately, that software and those features also comes with the opportunity to lock the equipment in ways that really actually undermine the farmer's ownership rights over that pricey equipment.
Right. I wanted to ask about this. If this particular sensor or computer chip or whatever that only John Deere or only John Deere certified people can fix it, if that goes wrong and I have this piece of equipment, is it bricked, as they say in the industry? Can I actually, are there such scenarios where I could not use this thing?
Yeah, there are scenarios under which the only solution possible to get the equipment up and running again is if somebody with the John Deere software tool shows up and plugs in that tool to your equipment and runs whatever process they need to run. That there's no other way to get the equipment operational other than, you know, what some farmers have done, frankly, which is to purge the John Deere software and put on alternative cracked software as the only alternative to get the equipment running again if the dealer won't come out. And farmers, like, that's totally unacceptable to them. There are situations where every single farm is using the same type of equipment during the same time of year. And so these bottlenecks form with dealership service. And you could be sitting there waiting weeks for a dealership technician to be able to come by your farm, plug in one of their dealership laptops, and get the equipment going again. And some of these issues are just totally based in software, that the equipment is actually working fine. And if you could just turn off this little error, then the equipment would just go on happily. But unfortunately, that's what happens when it's designed to require this special tool to basically restore its functions. After it hits a certain kind of fault, the equipment will just go into shutdown mode until somebody comes and services it.
Now, this $99 million settlement, it's a class action suit. Is it only the people who are in court filing this suit, or are other farmers who use this equipment able to sign on now and get some of that compensation?
The process has not been strictly decided, but other farmers who use the equipment and have had issues with their equipment can file some of that information to get restitution. And then every farmer who has John Deere equipment should get access to the parts, tools, and information, the dealership computer program that I was discussing just earlier. For 10 years, they've guaranteed access to that as part of this settlement.
Now, the argument from John Deere, and it's similar in other so-called right to repair cases, is, hey, we've got some proprietary software. These are intellectual property issues, and this is complicated stuff. We don't want, random, insufficiently trained mechanics working with this, or it could really foul up the system. What do you make of those arguments saying, hey, maybe the company has a case here?
Yeah, I mean, I would summarize that argument as the benevolent monopoly. John Deere has locked you out of the personal equipment that they sold to you for several hundred thousand dollars because they're just worried about you and they have your best interests at heart. That's cold comfort to somebody who's about to lose their entire farm because the equipment that they need to fertilize or to seed or to harvest is stuck in limp mode, waiting for the John Deere dealership to come out and plug in a computer and hit a button. So, I mean, to me, the most relevant rights are the rights of the farmer, not the John Deere's rights to produce equipment that requires a certain tool to get it working again, and then to withhold that equipment from the people that bought the property. That just seems unfair to me. Now, this does not remove John Deere's right to, control the copyright for this software or to control the patents for all their equipment. All those rights are still protected. We're just saying that the owner of the equipment should get access to the parts, tools, and information that are necessary to use the equipment that they bought.
Now, this is a lawsuit against John Deere. It's not the only one. The Federal Trade Commission last year kicked off a suit. States joined on, including, I think, one of the more recent ones, Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. Can you talk a little bit about that lawsuit and the potential outcomes?
Yeah, I mean, this lawsuit really is about going after the same conduct that's in the class action, that John Deere specifically has designed this equipment to be reliant on software that they don't make available outside of their authorized dealerships. So the difference between these two lawsuits is... I would say the FTC and this group of state attorneys general, they have a lot more experience and they're going much more towards getting the injunctive relief, getting the actual solution that breaks this kind of logjam around repair for farmers. And hopefully, that there's some progress towards that given this settlement, but it's only for 10 years, which is... to me, that's kind of a bizarre state of affairs where you have to pay close to $100 million for mistreating farmers in some way. You have to make this software available for 10 years. But then what happens in 10 years? Does it go back to the underlying conditions which allowed for farmers to sue you and get $100 million? That seems like a kind of bizarre state of affairs. If it was wrong to withhold farmers' ability to fix the equipment such that you lost this, they didn't lose the lawsuit. If it was wrong to withhold farmers' right to repair this equipment such that you are having to pay penalties, it seems like you should stop doing that.
We're talking to Nathan Proctor, the Senior Right to Repair Campaign Director for the Public Interest Research Group. We're talking about the right to repair movement after John Deere paid out $99 million in a settlement claiming the company monopolizes repairs on their product. Yeah, Nathan, people listening might think, well, bummer for farmers. I'm not a farmer. This issue doesn't affect me. Well, I've talked to you in the past. This right to repair concept and the lack of right to repair affects a lot of goods, a lot of consumer goods and other things. What is the scope of this issue?
Yeah, I mean, from our toasters and our tablets, yes, to our tractors, the stuff that we buy is getting harder and harder to fix. It used to be that when you bought something, it would come with full service manual. The parts would be standardized and easy to source from multiple locations. But that has changed dramatically, and especially over the last 20 years or so, to Now these products are, the repair process is very proprietary. The manufacturer, you know, puts so much software in each of these parts that it becomes very difficult to source them outside of the manufacturer's supply chain. And at the same time, they no longer make their parts available. They don't publish service manuals anymore. We have been looking at hundreds of different products, appliances, you know, home computing, audio equipment, and it's pretty bad out there. So many of these products are just impossible to fix when you have a problem. Even the manufacturers now, if you call them and say, hey, I'd like to get a repair for this, almost always they will tell you, oh, we don't actually fix that product, even if it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So this is a big problem, and it's driving electronic waste, and it's wasting a lot of consumers' money. So that's why the Right to Repair brings together, you know, farmers and consumers and environmental activists and advocates to come together to just make a more fixable system where we are allowed and capable and, you know, empowered to fix the stuff that we buy.
That takes us to legislation. Some states have passed right to repair legislation. Wisconsin currently is not one. There was a law introduced last year. It didn't make it through the latest legislative session in Wisconsin, so we don't have that. What are you seeing in states, though, that have pursued right to repair legislation?
Yeah, I mean, slowly but surely, things are getting better for a set of devices. You know, we've been publishing compliance analyses about which products you can get manuals and spare parts for. And it used to be, like, for example, cell phones, that none of the major cell phone manufacturers would allow you to have service manuals or would sell spare parts. But now, basically, they all do that. That's a direct kind of response to the pressure that Right to Repair has put on these companies. But it's clear to me from just looking across all the devices in our homes that we need, that we rely on, or that businesses rely on, that there's a lot of places where we really still can't fix these products and we have more work to do. And so we're hoping to pass more of these right to repair laws and then to work to make sure that they're being enforced and that companies know these requirements are there and that they honor them.
At the federal level, has there been much action in Congress toward right to repair laws?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a number of hearings. There's bipartisan legislation concerning car repair, which you know, looks like it might move forward, called the Repair Act. There's a number of different things that Congress has done. The both the Biden administration and now the Trump administration have taken some steps to support right to repair. And so I think that this is an issue that's clearly kind of common sense and common ground and something that I think is going to keep moving forward on every level.
One thing I want to bring up is, you know, people might think the right to repair it yourself, but also affected in this is that third party. It could be your auto repair shop or the cell phone repair store or the tractor repair place or whatever. Those are often, you know, that local business. Are they, do I have this right, they're being squeezed out of this if John Deere or the automaker or the cell phone manufacturer or whatever doesn't release the manuals? I can't get them, but it's possible that repair shop can't get them either?
That's right. I mean, John Deere's software, which it uses in the dealerships, is not available outside the dealerships, even to other mechanics. Even, let's just say, you know, in a lot of places, the biggest mechanic for farm equipment will be a dealership. But it could be that the closest dealership to you is a Case dealership and you use Deere equipment or vice versa. This law would also, you know, allow those other dealerships to service equipment that's not, you know, their brand, because now they can't restrict access to just a certain set of suppliers. So that should empower choice in the marketplace. There should be multiple places that can fix this equipment. And that means more options, more convenience, and lower prices. And all of that is good for farmers, or in the case of other kinds of equipment, good for the consumer.
Now, in the absence of nationwide legislation or all states having legislation on right to repair, as with this John Deere class action suit, we saw litigation get some, at least some relief to farmers. Do you expect to see, or are we seeing, a lot of court cases on right to repair in various markets?
We have seen cases. There's cases all the time, but frankly, the case law, I don't think, is totally sufficient to deal with the problem. Even though there's been, you know, significant cases. There was a case, Eastman Kodak, went all the way to the Supreme Court about the kind of unfair, anti-competitive practices in the repair market for equipment. Companies are definitely still doing this conduct. I think we really need to create new rules and have a new enforcement push if we want this behavior to cease. Because if you are a manufacturer, it is absolutely in your self-interest to control the repair of your products if you're allowed to. And that's basically what companies across every sector of the economy have done.
Have you seen any companies kind of swim against the tide there and say, hey, here's a selling point of our product. You can get it repaired at, you know, wherever you want, or we're going to make it available if you want to try to sell it yourself and say, hey, this is a way to differentiate ourselves from those companies who make it harder to repair.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Google, for example, has redesigned their watches, their Pixel watches, so that they're kind of the most repairable of all the smartwatches you can buy right now. You know, the other reason why companies are advertising or, you know, kind of being more explicit about the repairability of their products is that in Europe, companies have to post a score for how fixable their products are at the point of sale, much like we have Energy Star labels for appliances. And companies have been making, have been paying attention to what those labels are requiring and making their products score better on those metrics. And that's another kind of reform that I think we should bring here to American consumers, because nobody walks into the store and says, oh, I'm just going to buy something totally unfixable. But it's impossible to know when you're looking at these different products what might be more convenient to fix and what might have you, you know, paying through the nose or replacing a product way sooner than you otherwise would want to.
And what are you watching for next in the right to repair world?
You know, I started this work because I believe people should be able to fix stuff that it's the right thing to do, that it's better for society and for the planet. And I'm going to keep pushing until that's the outcome that we can see. People are fixing a lot more and throwing out less. And we've got a lot of ground to make up to kind of turn that ship. And so, I mean, I would say we're going to continue to push to enforce the laws that we have on the books and to expand them to new states. And that really has been the focus for ours for some time.
Nathan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Nathan Proctor is the Senior Right to Repair Campaign Director for the Public Interest Research Group. We've been talking about a John Deere settlement paying out $99 million to farmers after a class action lawsuit. Hey, have you been affected by this right to repair issue as a mechanic, a farmer, or maybe with something you bought for your own household? Share your story with us, something you wanted to repair but couldn't. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.